You started to talk about something I thought was very interesting yesterday, Pujum, that when you said that a pure devotee begins to manifest certain, I think you call them shaktis, right? Can you explain a little bit more about that, what those are?
Well, a devotee is kind of a shaktyavesh avatar. So what does that mean? It means that there's descent, there's avatarana of the of different shaktis of Bhagavan. So you can find that list of shaktyavesh avatars in Lago Bhagavatamrita Vyasadeva. Was Shaktyavesh. Different manifestations of God carried with them a certain amount of Shakti. So that becomes manifested as Jnana in so many different forms.
Jnana means knowledge.
Knowledge, Prakash, Jnana Prakash, manifestation of knowledge, power.
Beauty, like that. Is that one of them?
Grace.
Yes. All those things. So you saw these manifested in Srila Prabhupada?
Yes, actually in the... If you read Srila Prabhupada's speech on his Guru Maharaj's Vyas Puja Day, he talks about Guru Tattva being one. So Guru is one, not two. So actually, the Siddhanta is that Guru Tattva is one. And it becomes manifested through different individuals. So Prabhupada's words there was, there's no question of my Guru and your Guru. My Guru means my Guru versus your Guru. That's not the right picture frame to use in looking at gurus. You should have a more holistic picture that there's one Guru Tattva. It becomes manifested through different individuals. In that way, there's difference and unity. There's Veda Veda. There's difference and non-difference. If you begin to be tribal and think that my guru is and his disciples, we're one tribe, and that guru and his disciples, it's another tribe, and we're in competition, that's not the way to look at it. Guru Tattva is one, and it manifests, it's the same, it comes through different individuals. And then it becomes a little tricky, because we can't see the forest for the trees. We think that one individual is a particular kind of guru, and we become attracted by the particularities, then there's other particularities, and then we miss the big picture, which is that the Guru Tattva descends, and it comes the same, comes through different individuals, but in slightly different ways. So that is always to be remembered. Otherwise, we become very mixed up. My guru and your guru, my mission, your mission. That's looking in a small and narrow way. So you can refer back to Srila Prabhupada's speech in 1936 or 35, something like that, in Gaudi, in Bombay, Gaudiya Math. About there's no question, my guru and your guru. Guru Tattva is one. And then we also don't become mixed up with Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru. Shiksha Guru means the in the commentary to Chaitanya Charitamrita on that verse, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says, both are given samasaman, samanaman, equal respect. The guru has a function. Guru is one, but there are two functions. One is the initiating function, the other is the teaching function. And sometimes they are manifested through one person, sometimes through different people. So Krishna Das Kaviraj lists his Shiksha Gurus. This is like five or six gurus. So how does he give one more to one, less to another? How does he regard them? They're all to be regarded as guru. We don't shouldn't make a distinction. If we make a distinction, then once we're off the mark, not on the mark. One time, Prabhupada sent me to invite someone to he was going to have a little mahotsava, and he wanted to issue nimantran to different god brothers and different mats. And I went to one and I asked those, Swamiji, please, Prabhupada wants to invite you for prasad. He said, "Ah, Swamiji," he said, "I regard him as my shiksha guru, and but I can't come. We have some other program. I can't come to the. I can't. I'm sorry. I can't come that day. Too busy." And then I went back and told Srila Prabhupada. So he said, "What did he say?" He said, "He unfortunately he can't come that day. He's too busy, but." He regards you as his shiksha guru. Prabhupada immediately said, "Shiksha guru, he regards it." Then why he disregards the order of guru? Shiksha guru, diksha guru, they are not to be considered different. If he regards me as shiksha guru, then this is guru of agya. This is disregard of the order of the spiritual master. He regards me as shiksha guru, just see. But he's too busy, he can't come. I am inviting and he's denying. This is Guru Aravagya. It's offense against Guru. So that brought home, it is Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru. You don't make distinction. There's just difference in function. One is teaching, one is initiation. And one needs a Shiksha Guru. One needs a Shiksha as long as one does. Sometimes if one has a, doesn't, the Diksha Guru is no longer in this world. Still, one needs Guru. Because the devotional path is not, you know, there's many pitfalls. And as long as the mind is gunic, as long as the mind is influenced by the three gunas, any combination of the three gunas, when you read Bhagavatam, you transform pure sound into gunic sound in your mind. The mind always does it. It's just the nature of the mind. As soon as the mind picks up something from the senses, it begins to mutilate it. So our mind, because of its gunic qualities, sattva, rajas, and tamas, the mind is always transforming everything it picks up. So as soon as you hear Bhagavatam, as soon as you write it down in your mind and you think about it, actually you destroy it. So the only way to really receive sound is through a transcendental via media. As long as the mind is gunic, you're prone to make a mistake. You're basically, it's a kind of a hopeless situation, in fact. Mm. So someone, as long as you're in that position, and you're Diksha Guru, you still have to have Shiksha Guru. You have to have someone to give you pure sound. Otherwise, you just become a... It's worse than half baked. It's not even half baked. It's just some corruption of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. It has to be. This is just the nature that we are gunic entities. We are made of the three gunas. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunyo Bhavarjana. Different ways of interpreting that, but anyways, so the potency is one. It's coming down. We should recognize that, and we should try to make ourselves available to receive the spiritual potency which is coming down. There are two different ways of approach. One is to grab, the other is to receive. As long as we are still a grabber, then we always we corrupt everything again. Srila Bhakti Sanatana used to talk about two kinds of seeing, the Kudarshan and Sudarshan. When you go before the deity, you approach any transcendental object to see with your bogey eyes and bogey mind, that is Kudarshan. you are seeing, but you are seeing through the eyes of a selfish enjoyer in some way. Sudarshan is when you approach the transcendental object to be enjoyed as a servant. That's called the eye of seva. The seva chakshu. When we have the eye of seva, then when we see the spiritual master, we see the deity, when we come in contact with the holy name, then we're in the position of a servitor. As long as we to grab it, it's a kind of using it for our own enjoyment. That's Kudarshan. So there's an article, Kudarshan and Sudarshan. When you go to the temple with the attitude that, well, let me, please accept my service, whatever you want me to do, I'll do, that's the service of servant approach. When we approach it another way, even to enjoy the beauty of the deity in some way, that's not pure darshan. That's a kind of a crooked, that's not the real darshan. There's an eye of service, you see. As long as we look in the wrong way, we'll enjoy the beauty here, but outside when we go, we won't enjoy it. As long as the environment is nice, when we have an enjoying attitude and the environment is nice, it's okay. But as soon as the environment changes and becomes unenjoyable, then at once we become miserable. So the eye of service, the service attitude, is never dependent on the environment. The environment may be good, the environment may be bad. The eye of service, the attitude of service, will always be able to switch the environment into one of service. As long as we still want to enjoy, then this is great. But as soon as you're someplace else, you feel miserable. So the attitude is so important, the service attitude. Sudarshan, Kudarshan. So to approach the spiritual master also, you must have that attitude. When you approach the Bhagavatam, you must have that attitude. And until we are pure, then the spiritual master, whether coming in the form of Shiksha Guru or Diksha Guru, is the one who opens up the way for us. Otherwise, our approach from the beginning, it's rotten. We're not approaching from the Atma. We're approaching from the mind. And it's impossible to get rid of that until you're pure. Until you're pure, there's always a chance to make a mistake. So as long as you can make a mistake, you can fall. So therefore, there's always necessity of guru up until that point when you are totally pure. Then you still need in the higher level. But at least you must be out of the influence of the gurus. That's not so easy to do.
In your now you've been spending the last few years wandering around the planet, interviewing all these religious leaders from so many religions and cultures, transcendental philosophers and so on. Do you find anywhere else such purity that you saw with Prabhupada?
There's a lot of purity in different places, but there, you know, purity in some places is dependent on rules and regulations. It's dependent on form. Because two things always go together, spirit and form. You probably heard that many times. Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to talk about it. Saragrahi versus Bharavahi. You know that analogy. Saragrahi versus Bharavahi. So one who is able to extract the essence, the Saragrahi, and the Bharavahi has to bear the burden. Usually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur applied it to, in a religious sense, to form versus spirit. So there were those on the religious path that could find the Sara, the essence, and take it, and their progress was quick. It's kind of like being on the inside track. If you just if you can't find the essence, the essential truth, then you have what someone called the 10,000 things to juggle. You have to accept the burden of many of the rules and regulations and do this, do that, because you couldn't find the essential truth. So ultimately, the essential truth is love of God. You know, that is the aim. And in the sadhana, the sadhana is huge. You know, look at Hari Bhakti Vilas. If you want to do stuff, just open Hari Bhakti Vilas. You can be busy every minute, every day. There's some mantra to do something. And it's a very interesting way to go. It's called the Pancharatrik way, the Agamic way. And it's very useful. But it's also very, very, very large. And the key, the sara there, is to do everything with love. That whatever you're doing, swakarmana, tamabhyarchya, Bhagavad Gita, whatever you're doing, whatever work you do with love, and you do with surrender. In Hari Bhakti Vilas, at one place, there's a mantra. You know, Hari Bhakti goes from when you wake up in the morning to when you go to bed at night. Everything's covered. And the last thing at night, there's a mantra, and you say that I surrender whatever I did with my eyes, with my nose, with my ears, with my limbs, with my feet, even with the genitals, mentions everything in the verse. Whatever I did with all my body, with my mind and my speech, now I offer that to you. That's a samarpana mantra before you go to bed. So some person, and there's a little controversy too, some people say you should only offer what you did that was good. There's a little difference of opinion. Some people say whatever you did that was good, that you can offer. Another person says whatever you did, whatever it was, whether good or bad, you should offer it. So anyway, this is a samarpana mantra, it's to offer everything. So with that kind of surrender, if you have that attitude through the day, that whatever I'm doing with all my senses, this I'm offering. Yadashnashi, yad karoshi, whatever you're doing during the day, whatever you're eating, doing, if you have that attitude that you're making it as an offering, that is an essential truth. That's an essential principle. And if you're doing so many mantras, you can see people, mantra after mantra, they have to do this, and kusha grass, and put this here, and then another thing, and then another mantra. And they become lost in so many rituals. This is called Nibbara. And they feel that if I don't do this, if I missed out, if I have the wrong number of blades of kusha grass, then maybe the whole thing is ruined. People think like that. I missed something. I had the turmeric. I forgot the turmeric. Maybe all the sacrifices. He begins to worry. I used to read Hari Bhakti Vilas a lot, you know. I used to be really into rituals. So one time I came in and I had the book. It was in Bombay, in fact, in Juhu. And Prabhupada said, what is that book? I said, Hari Bhakti Vilas. He said, you keep reading that book, you're going to go to hell. It really shocked me. And then for a while, I couldn't say, how could Prabhupada say that? This is, Sanatana Goswami's book. It's the only thing in here is quotations from scripture. How could it? So for me, it was horrible. How could Prabhupada say something? You know, I realized, of course, this is the way. Because then you make so many distinctions. I'm pure. You're not pure. Maybe even he's giving me charanamrita. Maybe it's couldn't take it from me. Yeah, you make so many distinctions. You may be making up parades, and then you go to hell. Because it's a lack of a... Forget the big picture. Don't see the forest for the trees. So this is a kind of a bara. And one time Bhaktivinoda is comparing in religion too. He says, the sampradaya, the whole, not just one person, the whole sampradaya becomes carrying the bara. There's examples. Just like an individual can lose the essence and end up being involved in so many details. The whole sampradaya can go that way. It loses the spirit. And in the end, there's a book. And they have a stack of books, not just one book, stack of books. And it's dusty. And all day they're ringing bells and doing puja. and someone comes by and they want to find out about it, yeah, come back tomorrow. You know, we have no time. You know, we have to finish the puja. We have to, then we, you know, of course, we have to take rest. Come later. You know, they lost the spirit. I mean, it's like it said that the Sabbath is made for men, not men for the Sabbath in the Bible. You know, these things are made. Human beings are the important elements. Someone else is doing goseva all day. Very learned, 10 PhDs. He learned so many shastras and he's engaged in goseva all day. This is a waste. He learned that to speak to people, human beings. If he just engaged in feeding the cow, this is a lack of discrimination. Very pious, you know, and serve the cows in Vrindavan. But this is not what you learn the shastra for. You're supposed to speak to people, humans. That's the mission. So always never forget the essence of things. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. There's the verse, one time I went to a big debate, it's a Madhva Sampradaya on Atato. Just on the first two words of Brahma Sutra. It was a 3-day debate. And they called Ramanuja Sampradaya, especially Shankar Sampradaya, to debate the meaning of Atato. So, as you know, these two words are very important. The first words of Brahma Sutra, how deep is their meaning? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Brahma Jigyasa, the desire to find out about Brahma, occurs inside a human heart and brain at some point in time. What's the proportion of people that this occurs in? A true desire to know what the Supreme, what the Absolute is. How many people, out of millions of people, how many people does that desire, all of a sudden the desire to know, I want to know about reality. A burning desire to know about truth. How many people does that occur in? Yeah, they want to know, where do I find a husband? Where do I find a wife? How do I get a career? Where do I get a salary? You know, these are jigyasas that occur in most people. But in some person, somewhere, sometime, a desire to know about Brahma, reality, truth, absolute truth. Atato, now then, this occurs. So when is that point in time? When is that now? And then means after something else. So what was the precondition that allowed that desire to occur in the heart? What was it that caused the desire to happen? This is the meaning of the first two words, you know. At a certain point in time, the desire to know the absolute truth happened. You know, it's like a spontaneous something happens. Oh, wow, how did it happen? Why did it happen then? The scientists are puzzling their minds. And then it happened. Then means something, then means after something else. What was that thing that caused it? When and how? These are the atato. And so Ramanuja Sampradaya has an opinion that before Purva Mimamsa, before Uttara Mimamsa Vidhan, there's Purva Mimamsa. So you did rituals and you read Vedas, and then somehow in the midst of all that, you became purified, and then Brahma Jigyasa, there was a desire to know about Brahma. Madhvas disagree. They say, no, they can't, they can't work Purva Mimamsa. It has to be something more profound, something deeper. In Gaudiya Sampradaya, Baladeva Vidyabhushana interprets Atato. He says, even after being born in a pious family, even after studying in all the Vedas and scriptures, even after practicing, still there's another something that's needed. That he calls Sadhu Sangha. At that point, when one somehow or other, through Agyata Sukriti or Gyata Sukriti, somehow meets a sadhu, then some spark is ignited in the heart. And then we'll come to the point of realizing, this reality, and I should inquire. There's a desire to find out what it is. So they're very important words. So we should see about humans. This Brahma Jigyasa doesn't occur in a cow. It occurs only in humans. This is when we talk about all these verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jare Dekho Tare Koho, Krishna Upadesh. It doesn't mean to cows. It means to human beings. So even if we see, whoever we see, it's an important moment. It may seem like, you know, in some countries, when they're walking on the street, if someone touches them somehow, they say, this is, you know, from the past life. Someone couldn't walk by me and just pass by me if there wasn't some, my karma in the past. There's some connection with that person. If someone, we meet somewhere, someone, there must be some purpose for that. They're important. Even as he's a small child or anyone in the street, it's a human being. That human being has the possibility of Brahma Jigyasa. So we should never underestimate anyone. So, anyway, we got off the subject.
Very much the subject.
So Srila Prabhupada, when we were traveling with him, it was so interesting. We'd meet people by chance. They'd come to see Srila Prabhupada. And in the end, you know, they turned out to be great devotees. It was very interesting. Someone who you never thought, well, this is not a great scholar. This is just an ordinary person. And 10 years later, they're president of a temple at GBC or something. And it seemed like an accident that they met Srila Prabhupada. Some accident. And that happened so many times.
Yeah. And he spent equal time with whoever he met. He thought that whoever he encountered, with Krishna had sent for some reason. Even if it wasn't to change them, you know, their consciousness so much, just to help them up the path a little bit. He encouraged everyone. But then he would go to some big scholar. Remember some of the big scholars that he met.
And nothing would happen.
5 minutes and he's gone. Arjuna, let us go.
And sometimes with religious leaders too. Prabhupada had a term he called stereotyped ecclesiastics. You can find it in the old Bhaktagata. Stereotyped ecclesiastics. Means that there's no prana. Prana acheta shahetu prachar is this song of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prana acheta shahetu prachar. Whoever has real life, he can preach. So this spiritual life, the life current, life force from Krishna Kaya, that is the important thing. If someone has that, then you find so many devotees. And you find all the good qualities. And then somewhere else it's dead. Like a corpse. And then Bhaktisiddhanta is a shub, like a corpse. No life. So a sampradaya can become like that also. Then there's actually no more sampradaya. Sampradaya means samyak pradiyate, which is samyak, which is completely given, which is passed down as sampradaya. Samyak pradiyate. That's a sampradaya. And when the current stops, when the faucet's turned off, in the Bhagavad Gita you say sakalene amata yogo nashtak parantapa. It says that I knew you, you know me. This was passed down from Vivasvan to Manu. And in the end, the parampara was finished. And Ramanujacharya says in his commentary to that verse, it was because of the laziness of the disciples. Sakalene hamata yogo nashtak parantava. Why? Because of laziness of the disciples to receive it properly. And therefore, it became nashta. So I have to be careful. The current may still be going on, but because the receptacle is broken, or not kept in tone, in spiritual tone, to receive the teachings, therefore it becomes nashta.
Humor.
humor.
Srila Prabhupada used to tell jokes sometimes. And he was generally always in good humor and always greeting everyone with a smile and talking with them. It was so wonderful to see. As soon as some, you know, in some kind of institution, there's kind of a block. And in ISKCON, after a while, it became a little of a block, too. You know, Prabhupada's private, can't see him. But when he was in India, you know, as soon as someone would poke their head around the door, Prabhupada, come in, you know, and sit down, and Prabhupada, where are you from, you know, and where, how many children do you have, and he's talking to them. And I saw so many times in Bombay, someone would just come to the door, put their hand on Prabhupada, yeah, come in, and Prabhupada would spend, you know, there were things to do. There was a schedule to keep, everything. But still, Prabhupada would talk with them. Anyone who came there. It was so wonderful to see. It was always open. Prabhupada one time was sitting in L.A., the temple, and Prabhupada said, yes, in India, he said, we have a civilization. We have open doors. We have open windows. We have open minds.
That's a good one. And we were talking yesterday, when we were talking upstairs, about how every moment with Srila Prabhupada was a surprise. You never knew what was going to happen in the next moment. And this gives rise to humor, because Prabhupada even once told me that I asked him, what is humor? What makes something funny? And he said, well, it's the difference between what you think is going to happen and what actually happens. So with Prabhupada, you always expected something to happen, and it never happened that way. So he was always funny.
It was even when, you know, Tamal Krishna Goswami came in once. I was sitting there, and Tamal came in, and I don't know. Prabhupada wanted him to go back to the States, or wanted him to do something, I don't know. And Tamal didn't want to go. And he said, Prabhupada, he said, I might as well go to China. I thought, maybe it's a good idea. Then the next day he came in, you know, and Prabhupada decided, he said, you know, maybe it's, I think it's good, you should go to China. China. He said, but I have all my buses in the U.S., you know, we have a big program there preaching, and it's going on, you know, I believe, it's my responsibility. China. And he was arguing with Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no. He said, I was thinking about it. And I think you should go to China. And I was sitting there watching this. Prabhupada said, how can I go? All the buses, don't you? Prabhupada, this is a huge program. Maybe you don't understand. We have a huge program. Preaching is going on. China. In the end, he went to China, you know, and it opened up China. Of course, no one knows what's going to happen in China. And recently, Shamsunu was telling me that Umapati Swami had been in Mayapur with many wonderful Chinese devotees. Mm. And China is such a huge country. You never know what's going to happen there with Krishna consciousness. So we don't know the things. And Prabhupada had an eye to see, you know. When he came, I was president of Columbus Temple one time. And Prabhupada came for a program. We had a house. He stayed in the house. And in the morning walk, he'd seen some church. And it was kind of down the street. And he asked, you know, what is that church? And I think there was a for sale sign or something. He said, inquire about it. Maybe we can purchase that church. And there was no money. You know, I had a job, just a very ordinary kind of job in an engineering company. And, you know, I'd give the money to the temple, pay the rent. And it wasn't that much. The place was pretty cheap. And the church was thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars they wanted. And I probably didn't call up the agent, real estate agent, and see, and then how much, you know, and how much down payment, and seriously discussing, you know. And I thought, oh, wow, how can he? We have no money. And probably was thinking, if they can give it to him, we'll use the church for a spiritual purpose. If they can give us part of the... It's really shocking. And before he went from Columbus, I and my wife were doing the books. Anyway, I just got married. And he said, so you should buy an IBM compositor. This is before there were computers that did justification before you could type a book, a standard book page on a computer. You needed a machine called a compositor. And it was very expensive. And the girls had to go for 2 weeks and take special classes in how to operate this compositor. So Srila Prabhupada said, you must get this compositor. And we had to call up, you know, and order. And it was thousands of dollars. Thousands of dollars. That is how I used to pay my paycheck. I had to give to pay for this compositor. And I run into UN to take classes. And then we set up in the temple, you know, in the Nectar of Devotion. That was the book that was being worked. The Nectar of Devotion manuscripts would come. And she'd type it in. That was the first book. And we send that off to ISKCON Press. But it was, you know, the Prabhupada was there immediately. He wanted to, you know, this church for sale. And then buy the compositor. Yeah, call them up tomorrow, buy the order of compositor.
Yeah.
And and most where there was Prabhupada, there was always activity. It was always dynamic.
And there was no limit.
He pushed
the devotees to far beyond what people thought was humanly possible.
Yeah.
And we always found it was so easy. Ultimately, everything was so easy.
If you wanted to get back to Godhead, the magazine to be like Time or Life. You know, which were very big magazines.
Yeah. In those days. Go to the government in London. He asked us to go to the government and ask them to donate part of Regent's Park for a temple. We said, Prabhupada, you can't just get Regent's Park from the government to build a temple. No, you go ask them.
Prabhupada always had a very big vision.
But by forcing us to go outside of ourselves that way and try for something impossible, then things did happen in a big way.
Who would ever thought? So I was also in that first Rath Yatra. Were you too? Down Regent Street.
Yeah.
So this was amazing. This was the first Rath Yatra, big Rath Yatra in London. And we had a huge parade with so many people and the chariots. Down Regent Street. I mean, this was, I'd go down the street to Trafalgar Square, Piccadilly, and who would have thought? And even Prabhupada got out and danced in front of the, and he wasn't feeling well.
The whole distance he danced.
And it was amazing. I always thought Prabhupada was going to collapse or something. I mean, he was just dancing in front of the car, and the car would stop, and Prabhupada would dance, and we'd go on. It was just absolutely amazing. Who would have thought, you know, that we had a huge theater on Regent Street? That was amazing. And you know, like, all these things came out of, you know, from spiritual potency. Otherwise, there's no way. And we felt we were dancing there. It just felt like we were in Vaikuntha, didn't it? It was just totally transcendental. So... when the pure devotee makes his appearance, there's a dynamism also which comes. Mm. And it's always whole. It's always complete. Mm. It's not man-made.
Mm.
A lot of, you know, you have to make always a distinction between man-made and revealed. Revealed. So, Srila Prabhupada, you can see. And he always said he didn't write his books, too. You know, we're sitting on the plane. Always, every plane trip, Srila Prabhupada had the Bhagavatam there. Always, the one volume of Bhagavatam, he'd sit and read it. And then he'd always remark to me, he said, I'm reading my own books. He said, what author sits and reads his own books? Do you know some author that reads his own books? You know why? Because I didn't write it. Krishna wrote it. So what author sits around and reads his own books? No author does that. He said, I'm reading this book. He said, how can I do that? Because I didn't write it. Krishna wrote it. Many times. Oh. Inevitably on the plane. You know, I'd be reading a book and even remarked on what they just think I'm reading my book.
But did you get that feeling yourself when you, when Prabhupada heaped all that translating work on you? That maybe I'm not, I'm, you look at your finished product and say, wait a minute, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
I always had that feeling with those letters. Sometimes we were remembering yesterday, we would arrive at some destination where everyone had, everyone knew that address, but they didn't know where Prabhupada was for about 2 months. They couldn't find him, or there was no address where they could send the letter. So they sent all of the letters to one address. And then when we would arrive there, would be sometimes 200 letters to answer. And Prabhupada wanted to answer every letter. So he had, I had to type letters day and night, sometimes all night. I would leave the light on. I'd find, wake up in the morning and sleep on the typewriter and immediately start again. Day after day, and then I would look at these pile of letters and say, wait a minute, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. Prabhupada did that through my brain. That's his potency. I know you have to go soon. Do we have, we have time for a few questions, if anyone has some questions of Pradyumna. Something they'd like him to discuss or talk about? Just a couple of questions. This is your chance. What, what advice would you give these young brahmacharis for their furtherment of their Krishna consciousness?
I'm not a person to give advice. But,
just one little thing, one little gem.
Well, that verse we're doing 2 days ago, you know, Sharanati Pisanichina. So that's a very important verse. I understand Maharaj also quotes that verse a lot. That's a very important verse.
What is that verse?
Some I think...
what is that verse?
The, to be humble as a blade of grass or tolerant in a tree. Someone said that Mr. Dr. Kapoor, you know, is Prabhupada's old godbrother. He related something. He said one time Prabhupada, when he was still his householder in Allahabad, he came up to him and he said, I shall preach all over the world, something like that. And he said, and this is my, there's a secret. He said, I have a secret. There's a secret. Shrinada Pisanichina. That verse. I mean, that's something that Dr. Kapoor had mentioned, that Srila Prabhupada said way back in Allahabad in the 1930s, early 1930s. Very important verse.
Can you explain that verse?
Well, I explained half of it yesterday, 2 days ago.
And the second half?
First half, actually.
And now the second half?
No, it's too long. And I was explaining from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You have to look at the commentary. But there's a few of those core truths that if you can become the vehicle of those truths, then that is the, you know, secret.
What are the four truths?
No, some of those truths.
Oh,
like that. Or other ones. And the whole temple should be vehicle of those truths. You know, the whole temple. I mean, what Maharaj has done here is just amazing. I think it's the most dynamic temple in the world that I've seen, the Chaupati temple. You know, everything is in such order, devotees are so nice. So, it's just so wonderful to be here. So, I think Maharaj, with his spiritual potency, was able to do this in Bombay. That's right. Whenever I come here, I always wonder about that. Wonder struck at what Maharaj did here in Chaupati. So he also, he, some people understand it and some people don't, you know. Some people understand there's a certain essential truth that they form the blood, you know, the the essential fluid of Krishna consciousness,
current,
the prana. Yeah. And other people don't understand that. It's okay to build buildings too, but some people just become building builders. Then everything gets lost, just bricks. But you can understand that the essential things, then the building can become permeated with spiritual potency also. If not, it just becomes a warehouse for eating and sleeping, Srila Prabhupada used to say. So it's so important to always keep those dynamic. There's only few, even. If you just have a few of those understandings, then they serve as a basis for everything. And if you lose them, then it just becomes administrative bureaucracy. You can see many spiritual bureaucracies. Actually, they're not spiritual anymore. It just becomes bureaucracy. So always try to keep it in a dynamic, spiritual way. Vidyabhadu jivanam. It's like when the wife, when the husband returns home, then the wife gets her life back. Vidyabhadu. Vidyabhadu jivanam. The jivanam, the life of the wife, is Harinama Sankirtan, like the life of the wife. When the husband comes home, she feels her life is back. So this is the kind of knowledge we want. Not dry knowledge, but living knowledge, living truth. All right.
Hey,
Krishna.